Case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Jones against Helms. Cosgrove, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, this case comes to the Court today on appeal from the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. The question presented is whether, under the Equal Protection Clause of the United States Constitution, a state, in furtherance of its interest in protecting its children and enforcing its criminal laws, may enact a statute which provides that a person who commits a crime of child abandonment and leaves the state is guilty of a felony, whereas a person who commits a crime of child abandonment without leaving the state is guilty of a misdemeanor. Appellee's challenge and...
Does it make any difference under this statute whether the particular person left the state 3 hours after the commission of the act or... 3 years?
No, sir. There is no time element specified on the face of the statute. Appellee's challenge and the Court of Appeals decision is predicated on the ground that the statute distinguishes between two classes of abandoning parents based upon the exercise of their constitutional right to travel, and that therefore the statute is void under the Equal Protection Clause. Appellee is a father who was ordered by a Georgia court to make child support payments, but who never did, who simply went to Alabama. He testified that he did not go to Alabama for the purpose of avoiding his child support obligations, but rather to attend school. When he returned to Georgia to visit his child, he was arrested on the warrant and felony of abandoning his child and leaving the state, and received a 3-year sentence suspended on condition that he make child support payments, which he never did. Instead, he just left the state again. He eventually became a resident of Florida. Upon his wife's death, he regained custody of his child, but he had some problems with the Florida authorities and moved back to Augusta, Georgia, where a child had to be placed in the Department of Family and Children Services custody, basically a welfare agency. And thereafter, the appellee was arrested on an outstanding bench warrant and sentenced to serve 3 years. After having exhausted his state remedies, the appellee filed a petition for habeas corpus in the United States District Court for the Middle District of Georgia, alleging that the statute violated his constitutional right to travel and was void under both the Equal Protection and the Privileges and Immunities Clause of the Constitution. The District Court ruled against the appellee, but upon appeal to the Fifth Circuit, the District Court's order was reversed and judgment entered for appellee.
Ms. Cosgrove, I had some difficulty interpreting the Fifth Circuit's opinion, perhaps because of its shortness. It seems to rely at some length on the Morissette case from this court, which was simply, as I had understood it, handbook of how this court would interpret federal statutes with respect to intent, and was not a constitutional doctrine at all. What would you say was the rationale of the Fifth Circuit, if there is one?
Your Honor, I believe the Fifth Circuit saw our statute as not having the requisite specific intent which would make it pass muster.
But why would it have to have requisite, why would it have to have any specific intent?
It was the Fifth Circuit's opinion that without the specific intent, the statute would be overly broad. It's our contention, of course, that it's not necessary to have a specific intent for that element of the crime.
Well, and unless you're talking about free speech, you don't have an overbreadth challenge of it.
That's correct, sir. I believe only in the First Amendment area has there been a chilling and an overbreadth problem addressed by this court. The Court of Appeals reasoned that inasmuch as the appellee did have a fundamental right to travel, that the statute would be subject to strict scrutiny. And secondly, since Georgia had no compelling state interest involved, that the statute would be violative of equal protection. The Court of Appeals also reasoned that the statute was overly broad in that we had the Uniform Reciprocal Enforcement of Support Act, URESA, which was available to vindicate any of Georgia's interests. Appellant appealed that decision on September 19, 1980, and this court noted probable jurisdiction on January 26, 1981. There are two issues before the court today. First, whether parents who commit the crime of child abandonment do have a fundamental right to travel in this instance. And secondly, if such a right does exist, whether Georgia's child abandonment statute impermissibly penalizes that right without being justified by compelling state interest. Now, turning to the first issue, it is Georgia's position that the fundamental right to travel, to migrate, to settle in other states was never intended to encompass and protect a criminal's right to avoid the consequences of his own misdeeds. Whatever the constitutional rights of criminals in other contexts may be, their rights to full and free travel are attenuated. For example, if a person commits a crime, just leaves the jurisdiction even without intent to avoid prosecution, he's nevertheless subject to mandatory extradition proceedings. And in addition, many states, including Georgia, have statutes of limitations which are told the instant a person leaves the state, thus dramatically increasing the time period during which a person may be punished for a crime. So since we do not believe that there are any fundamental rights involved in this case, we submit that it is the rational basis test which should be applied to this statute, and that the statute easily passes that test. For as this court has noted, it is the state legislature which is preeminently responsible for defining punishing crimes. And we submit that the state legislature could rationally have decided that a person who commits a crime, in this instance the crime of child abandonment, leaves the state, makes it much more difficult for the state to bring him to justice, that that person deserves a more stringent punishment. However, even if strict scrutiny test were to be applied, as Appley urges, we submit that the statute would also pass muster under this more exacting standard. For it is not every constitutional infringement, of course, that is barred. It's only those which rise to the level of penalty. It's our position, of course, that this statute in no way penalizes the right to migrate. Indeed, that if it has any effect at all upon the right to migrate and settle in other states, that effect is purely incidental and remote. For under the statute, a parent is free to move to any state he wishes, stay as long as he wishes, and the statute has absolutely no impact upon him at all unless he has committed the crime of child abandonment. So this statute is unlike provisions which this court has struck down in, for example, Crandall versus Nevada, a taxing provision that reached everyone who left the state. this statute is narrowly tailored to reach only those persons who have committed a crime.
Or intend to in the course of leaving the state, or intend to abandon the child later. This applies whether you abandon after you've left the state or before.
On the face of the statute, it does, Your Honor. However, it's our position that the appellee really would have no standing to raise that second prong of the statute, since the facts in this case, he pled guilty.
I understand.
That's correct. Secondly, I might mention that unlike some of the cases, for example, Maricopa County and Shapiro, where this court was concerned with provisions which address themselves primarily to indigents, that this statute does not impact on those persons who are in the blameless but unfortunate situation of poverty. Rather, this statute impacts on the most blameworthy persons, those parents who abandon their helpless children. So we feel that this statute no more penalizes parents who simply wish to go to another state than does the existence of an extradition law or an indefinite statute of limitations.
Of course, this whole problem could be solved, I suppose, if the Georgia legislature simply made child abandonment a felony.
Well, Your Honor, of course, the Georgia legislature certainly could have done that. Many states have, but I think that in not doing so, they have recognized the difference in the type of crime, in that the impact upon the child is greater because the likelihood of ever recovering any support is much less.
This is not a support statute. This is a criminal statute.
Well, sir, there are two elements in child abandonment. First, one has to desert the child.
Yes, but this is a criminal statute. There's nothing in this statute that requires the parent to support. It only punishes the parent for non-support.
For not supporting. That's correct, Your Honor. Of course, even if the court were to see this as somewhat of a penalty upon the constitutional right to travel, it's George's position that the statute is more than justified by our compelling interest in protecting our children and enforcing our criminal laws. This interest in protecting our children, appellee does not even dispute, and it is manifested in at least two other statutes which make this same felony misdemeanor distinction. For example, we have a statute which makes it a felony for a husband to abandon his pregnant wife and leave the state, whereas if he stays in the state, it is a misdemeanor. And similarly, we have a statute which makes it a felony if one is to interfere with the custody of a child who's committed to the legal custody of another, and then to take that child out of the state. And again, interference with custody of a child within the state is only a misdemeanor. So I think the court can see that Georgia is fairly consistent in this design to protect its children. And turning to the interest in protecting our criminal laws, practically speaking, when a criminal leaves the jurisdiction, Georgia, just like every other state, is dependent upon extradition to get that person back to face trial or to serve his punishment.
Do you have a general statute that makes it a crime to flee from justice or to abscond or to leave the state? What if you're under indictment and you leave the state? Is that a separate crime?
Not to my understanding, Your Honor.
But isn't that's not unheard of, though, around the country, is it?
There are many statutes, including federal statutes.
Could be a breach of a bail condition, I suppose.
Yes, sir, I think it could be.
Is that a crime in your state to break you to violate your bail?
I'm not at all sure, Your Honor. The felony provision of Georgia's child abandonment statute greatly enhances extradition. for, although as I'm sure this court is aware, that technically speaking, it is possible to extradite for misdemeanors under both state and federal law. As a practical matter, the discretion to refuse to extradite for misdemeanors is totally within the governor of the responding state.
Of course, if Georgia made this a felony across the board, all these problems would disappear, wouldn't they?
Perhaps our problems with extradition would disappear, Your Honor, but again, I would say that the Georgia...
As would this case disappear?
Yes, sir. The appellee would not contend that there was anything wrong with a felony across the board. It's simply our position that the Georgia legislature need not make that across the board distinction. As I was saying, the discretion to refuse to extradite for misdemeanors is totally within the purview of the governor of the responding state. But the Court of Appeals has said that Georgia really does not even need to use extradition to satisfy our interest in this case, that we have the provisions of URESA, the Uniform Reciprocal Enforcement of Support Act, which can vindicate any of our interests, namely that we can obtain support for the child or return the parent to the state. We submit that the Court of Appeals was in error in this regard for several reasons, and I need to explain that all 50 states have, in fact, adopted some sort of reciprocal enforcement act.
I ask, Ms. Kogler, if we agree with the argument to this point with you, we don't have to reach this question, do we?
I beg your pardon?
If we agree with what you have said up to date, supporting the constitutionality of the statute as not violative of the right to travel, then we don't have to reach this alternative.
That's correct, Your Honor. This is a less drastic means argument, which the Court of Appeals...
Which you don't have to rely on if we agree with your initial argument.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Because then you just need a rational basis.
That's correct, Your Honor. But the Court of Appeals used as an example of the overbreadth that we did have this alternative means available to us. And I think, quite honestly, that this alternative means simply is not effective. For under the version of URESA, which has been adopted by approximately 10 states, there is a provision by which an absent parent can totally avoid extradition. He simply submits himself to the jurisdiction of the court of the responding state and agrees to pay some child support, and he never comes back to Georgia. He never sees the inside of the jail. For the remaining states, which do not have that automatic avoidance of extradition, many of them nevertheless have a discretionary section which says to the governor of the responding state, basically, if there has not been a URESA petition filed, you don't have to extradite this person. You can require the URESA petition be filed first. And secondly, if there is an outstanding order of some type in existence, and the absent parent is complying with that order, then the governor can also just refuse to extradite that person. So I think if we were to follow the Court of Appeals decision in this case, we could conceivably have a situation where a person abandons his child in Georgia, goes to another jurisdiction, and even if the custodial parent, and I might add it is usually the custodial parent which files a URESA petition, even if that custodial parent were successful in getting the absent parent into the court, the responding state, it's more likely than not that he could totally avoid extradition by simply agreeing to pay child support. And the difficulty with that, you know, one might say, well, if he's paying child support, that ought to settle the problem. But the difficulty is that the duty of support, which ERISA contemplates is not the duty of support which obtains in the demanding state in Georgia, for example. It would be the duty of support imposable under the laws where the absent parent was, and that's presumed to be the responding state. So we can have a situation where the absent parent comes into court, he agrees to pay child support, he may well be, a respected member of the community by now, and the court simply will not impose a large amount of support on that absent parent, and thus really defeating the order of the Georgia court, and also not meeting the needs of the child.
Well, again, this is a criminal statute we're dealing with here, and the law of, that you're discussing and that was discussed by the Court of Appeals is not a criminal statute, is it? It's a statute to enforce the duty of support by making the parent supporters.
Yes, Your Honor, and it was the Court of Appeals' opinion that we could simply use this civil statute as a substitute for our criminal statute. It is our position, of course, that the state has a right to define and punish antisocial conduct such as child's abandonment, and that we have a right, if the need be, to put this person in jail, or at least to make him think that he is going to jail.
Are you interested in support for the child or putting him in jail?
Well, sir, they're dual interests. Of course we want support for the child. But I think the problem with the ERISA petition
I thought that was the whole purpose.
Well, it's the whole purpose if the person complies with court orders. But as Your Honor is probably aware, a person can say, of course I'm going to comply.
I understand you that somebody goes to another state and sends the money back, you'd still bring it back?
I beg your pardon?
If a man is given $25 a month support, and he goes to Alabama, and he sends back $25 a month, you still would make him come back and go to jail?
Not in that particular instance.
Right. He's not guilty of this offense.
No, he would not be guilty of child abandonment because he would...
No, I'm telling you, he has abandoned the child.
Well, there are two prongs, Your Honor.
Yeah, that's
you have to abandon your child, desert your parental duties, and then leave the child in a dependent condition. So if he were complying with a court order, regardless of how...
He violated the support order, and he went away, and he changed his mind and sent the money back. But he didn't come back. Would you still want him?
I think he would still be susceptible to this charge, Your Honor, because he needs to follow the court.
He needs to be taught a lesson.
Well, sometimes, Your Honor.
You know, it's sometimes called a pound of flesh.
Well, Your Honor, sometimes it's called a typical drifting absentee father who comes into one court and says, of course I'll pay. He pays for a few months and then goes on. And I think
you
that...
You'll never catch them.
It's very difficult, Your Honor. It really is. And I think that is one of the crucial reasons that Georgia needs this felony provision of the child abandonment statute, simply in order to be able to get this type of person back if need be. I think if we were to follow the Court of Appeals decision in this regard, our right to define and punish antisocial conduct such as child abandonment would be defeated because our right to enforce our laws is simply meaningless without an effective method of bringing the criminals back to trial.
Ms. Cosgrove, this statute says that the felony shall be reducible to a misdemeanor. How under Georgia practice is it reduced?
Your Honor, this can either be by the recommendation of the jury, and then it has to be approved by the judge, or the judge, on his own motion, can reduce the felony.
The prosecutor can't do it.
Not to my understanding. Mm-hmm. And that provision, I might note, is not unique just to child abandonment.
Right.
It applies to everything but capital felonies.
Mm-hmm. Shall be reducible to a misdemeanor, and that's in the discretion of the jury or the judge.
Basically, in the discretion of the judge, Your Honor, because the jury can recommend it, but the judge has to approve.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. In sum, Your Honor, we think that the Georgia child abandonment statute, particularly the felony division, is absolutely crucial to the enforcement of Georgia's interest in protecting her children and enforcing her criminal laws. We submit that the Court of Appeals decision in this case was clearly erroneous and should be reversed. Thank you.
Mr. Bonner?
Yes, sir. May it please the Court. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the Court. I want to get one thing straight, I guess, at the outset, and that is that we don't necessarily contest the opening principle, I think, that the state started its argument with, that is, that there's nothing in the right to travel which protects a parent or accused from the consequences of his misdeeds. That's not our argument at all, and that's a mischaracterization of it. I will concede at the outset that there is probably, in fact, there is certainly a valid area here, a general area here, for the application of the state's police power. The state can reach fugitive parents. It can prescribe that conduct. It can reach parents who use their right to travel across the state line to frustrate the state's interest, to compound an offense. But this isn't that kind of statute, and the existence of a valid area for the operation of that kind of statute doesn't save this one. We need to look at the if this were that kind of statute, then what she said about there being a reasonable connection and this being subject to the rational connection test would probably be valid. But this is not such a statute. The question before this Court as a preliminary matter is how this statute, by its terms, on its face, affects travel.
Well, I think the question before the Court, before you get to that, is what does the Fifth Circuit's opinion mean? Do you understand why they cited Morissette?
Not completely, Your Honor. I don't think Morissette necessarily has any basis here. But I think I can answer your question if you can let me get my next thought out, and then maybe you can revive it. As I say, our question here is how this statute affects the right of travel. And if you look at it, any travel triggers this statute. The reason, as the state has conceded, the reason for the travel is totally insignificant. The time of the travel is totally insignificant. It doesn't make any difference whether the man is accused before he crosses the state lines or whether he becomes accused subsequently. Although, for that subsequent class, obviously you have that privileges and immunities problem, which we don't have any standing to raise. But it's important to look at that aspect of the statute because it shows what the statute does. This isn't a fugitive statute. This Bobby Helms could have crossed the state line to visit his sick mother in Alabama. And as long as he was subject to being charged before or after with child abandonment, he would fall under this special felony felony jeopardy. There's not even any requirement in this.
What's the matter with that?
Well, quite a bit is the matter with that, Your Honor, because the right to travel is a constitutionally secured right.
Well, but it, certainly someone who is subject to not leaving the state under conditions of bail can't exercise his right to travel to visit his sick mother in Alabama.
Yes, sir, that's correct. But that person is accused. The restriction on his right to travel, for example, could be relieved by a court. It could be relieved. There are adjustments for that.
But there are all sorts of restrictions on rights.
Yes, sir, but this, again, is not a statute which applies to someone who stands accused. Bobby Helms, when he left the state, was not accused. And at least, well, the record is not clear on that, but he certainly wasn't arrested, and he certainly didn't know he was accused until he came back and was arrested.
Yes, but the restriction doesn't,
crime isn't committed unless he's already abandoned the child.
Well, no, sir, it can be committed subsequently.
Well, I know.
He can migrate.
Yeah, I know, but in this case, the claim is that he abandoned the child and then left the state.
That's true.
Well, that's what we're talking about. Whether that's unconstitutional.
Well,
to make the abandonment a felony if he's left the state.
In effect, what you are doing is inferring or raising the statute, I should say, is doing, is making it a presumption, erecting a presumption that any parent who leaves the state for any reason without even any nexus to the offense of abandonment.
Well, do you think it'd be, I suppose you would say it would be just as unconstitutional if they made it a misdemeanor to abandon the child and another misdemeanor to leave the state after having abandoned a child?
No, sir, there'd be no equal protection problem there.
Why?
It'd be the same
well,
offense.
Well, it would certainly bear on the right to travel, wouldn't it? If you left the state, you've committed another misdemeanor.
Oh, I see what you mean. You're talking about a flight type of thing. Yes, sir, that's true. But obviously you couldn't have that kind of statute without some intent element. You couldn't, you could,
well,
Georgia could not say,
know.
We presume that everyone who leaves the state is a fugitive.
Why would you have to have an intent element?
Well, you've got to at least have some connection. Intent is one way of connecting the exercise
statute
of the
says,
right to
the statute says if you abandon a child, you have committed a misdemeanor. Then it says, and if you leave the state after having abandoned the child, you've committed another misdemeanor.
Actually,
period.
Actually, Your Honor, the statute said misdemeanor to abandon your child, comma, and if the parent leaves the state, it's a felony. So it's
well,
not.
I know, but you would make the same argument if it was a misdemeanor, if there were two misdemeanors.
Well, no, I don't believe we would. I mean, you obviously, if you had a separate statute dealing with flight to avoid prosecution,
yes,
that's an encumbrance on the right to travel, admittedly.
Mm-hmm. But a valid one.
But that's a valid one. And there are valid ones. And there are invalid ones.
But you insist that there be an intent requirement.
No, sir. No, all I'm saying is that intent is one way to confine the intrusion onto the right to travel. Purpose would be another way. Some sort of nexus. I believe that Arkansas statute or the Rhode Island statute that says commits the offense by leaving the state. But here, what you've got is the exercise of a constitutionally secured right, which for any reason, for any purpose, and frankly at any time, triggers the special felony jeopardy. It is like... I don't think you'd have any trouble with a state statute here which said burglary is a felony carrying a 10-year sentence, but if the defendant doesn't confess, it carries 20 years. It'd be obviously that's an extreme example,
but
what you've got here.
Let's alter that a little bit. Instead of what you've suggested, it adds that if he flees the state for the purpose of avoiding prosecution, the penalty will be double.
No problem whatsoever, Your Honor. None whatsoever. I don't think, frankly, that there would be any problem if you had a Rhode Island-type statute where it says commits child abandonment by leaving the state. But the problem here is that you've just simply got an exercise of the right to travel which triggers it. And it can trigger it even before the defendant is accused.
How does this affect his right to travel? He can go wherever. He could go to Russia.
Well, now, it might not.
But if he took care of his children. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And he wouldn't violate any statute of Georgia.
That's right.
So how does this case involve the right to travel?
Same way Apotheker did. Mr. Apotheker could have traveled anywhere, too. All he would have had to do was renounce his associations. Well, let me back up, too, because you've raised what is really the next issue. Whose right to travel is affected here?
In fact, this man traveled twice.
Well, Your Honor,
the first one didn't even bother him.
You're assuming
didn't
a couple of things.
Twice?
You're assuming a couple of things.
Do I assume that he traveled twice?
Oh, he traveled abundantly.
Yeah, traveling
even more when he was in the Army. But the question is, whose right to travel is affected here? Well, you've got this kind of broad intrusion on a constitutionally secured right. It's everyone's right to travel, or at least every parent in this particular case.
It doesn't involve my right to travel because I haven't abandoned any children.
No, sir. But if you were a poor mill worker in Griffin, Georgia, no, but I'm trying to tell you I'm trying to answer the question of whose right to travel it affects. Well, you're living on a marginal income, you've separated. That's a real question of whether or not there's adequate support being given. That particular person's right to travel is chilled by this statute. He's under a special jeopardy. He may want to visit his
city. Because he's poor?
That's true. The poor are particularly... Poor man who traveled twice.
Yeah,
this is exactly
poor.
The situation, or I
could
think...
Could he borrow the money, son?
I'm sorry, what, Your Honor?
Could he use that money he used to travel to pay for his children?
He didn't go far. It was a Greyhound bus ticket. I suppose he could have. But this is comparable to the situation you had in Zablocki with its broad intrusion upon the right to marry. This court didn't stop to look into the depth of this fellow's pocketbook or into the justifications he had. Your own opinion, Justice Marshall, went ahead and talked about the people who dwelt on the margin, whose rights to travel were chilled, I mean, whose rights to marry were chilled.
Said, but you think it says, why in the world do you think I'm asking these questions?
I don't know. I was... Yes, sir, Justice.
And your position on one thing. Assume this statute said if a person abandons a child and thereafter, for the purpose of avoiding prosecution, leaves the state, it'll be a felony and otherwise a misdemeanor. Would you say that was constitutional?
I don't see any problem whatsoever with that.
So that your whole that, argument turns on the absence of intent.
Not necessarily, this is echoing what Justice Rehnquist asked, not necessarily on the absence of intent, on the promiscuous use this statute makes of the right to travel. The fact that it is
promiscuous in the sense that it applies when there's no intent.
No intent, no purpose, no connection with the offense. It pure happenstance.
It
he
would
leaves
be just
the state.
As though a state should make it a criminal offense to
travel. I'm sorry, Justice.
Well, if a state made it a criminal offense for anybody to leave Georgia, that would be an extreme example of what you find
and it would
invalid
not,
about this case.
Not analytically be different from this
that's
case.
Correct.
That's it exactly.
After having committed an offense.
That's what we've got here. Of course, every parent is subject,
but
theoretically.
But the reason this is a felony, not a misdemeanor, is because your client left the state of Georgia.
Because he exercised a right that the Constitution gave him.
After having committed an offense.
Well, it happened. But you see, they had to drag him back and establish his guilt of that offense.
Having committed the first element. Two-element offense.
But the reason it's a felony, not a misdemeanor, is because he left the state of Georgia. Had he not left the state of Georgia, it would be a misdemeanor.
If he had run from Phoenix City down to Tybee Light and hidden out in the dunes down there, he'd be guilty of a misdemeanor.
I thought you had previously conceded that if he had committed any crime and then left the state to avoid prosecution, they could double the penalty.
Yes, sir, but that's not this kind of statute. Now,
You tell me what's the distinction.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. If I did say that, I'm somewhat misunderstood the hypothetical thrown at me. I think even in that situation, you would have to have some nexus between leaving the state, an intent or a purpose, and the crime. No problem. That's a nexus that's sufficient. But again, this isn't that kind of statute. This says nothing about why he leaves the state. If it did, we wouldn't be here. We would not get by the reasonable, the rational connection
what
test here.
Should be a crime to escape from prison. It should be a misdemeanor, say, to escape from prison. And if, after escaping, if for any reason you leave the state, even if not for the purpose of avoiding prosecution, that should be a felony. Would that be constitutional?
That's a much tougher question, Your Honor.
How is it different?
Well, one thing that makes it different is, as a matter of fact, maybe that's a welcome question for me. In that particular case, you've got somebody whose liberty interests have been circumscribed because he's been convicted. And that's the difference between Bobby Helms and your hypothetical. You've got our situation, this particular statute, has an impact upon parents who, at the very least, are presumptively innocent of abandonment, who may not even have been charged with abandonment.
Yes, but the reason they may not have been prosecuted is that they left the state and couldn't be reached.
Oh, well, Your Honor, I think later the problem of their being reached is going to dissipate. That's not necessarily so.
Do you think Georgia could enact a blue sky law making it a criminal offense to misrepresent something in a prospectus about a security and completely omit any requirement that the misrepresentation be intentional?
If you're asking me whether you can have strict liability offenses, you certainly can, but you can't when you are triggering that offense on a constitutionally secured right. I suppose here you're vaguely talking about a right to free speech or something like that, but I don't think that's really quite comparable. I don't see any
well,
problem.
Well, there are an awful lot of crimes that have emerged in the past 50 years that don't require any intent at all.
Yes, sir. But they at least – but I don't think, Your Honor, that you're going to have an easy time finding some which turn on a constitutionally secured right without this court primarily coming in and saying that when you've got it turning on a constitutionally secured right, you've got to have a narrowly drawn statute. It's got to be carefully tailored to address the specific governmental interest.
You'd have no case at all, Mr. Helms, would you, if people who abandoned their children and didn't leave the state were also...
No problem at all. The state can make that judgment and throw us out of court.
You'd have no case at all.
No case at all.
So
we
your case depends upon the fact that other people are treated more leniently.
That's right. In effect, Georgia's made a judgment that for the same offense, people who happen to exercise their rights to travel are guilty of a greater offense, regardless of whether they in fact are, regardless of whether they are in fact trying to flee the jurisdiction and not visit their sick grandmother or seek educational benefits in
Alabama.
Suppose
it would be constitutional for Georgia to pass a statute that said if a parent abandons a child, that parent may not leave the state.
Let me run that by. I think that would, I suppose Georgia probably could.
Well, what they've done here is something less extreme. They've said if you leave, you get a more severe penalty. Or if a parent abandons a child, he may not leave the state. If he violates this restriction, he shall be guilty of a felony.
Our problem here with this particular statute is its impact upon a broad group of people. I think if you've got if you had a statute that's saying one who is charged with anything may not leave the state, that'd be perfectly valid. And that's sort of what I understood your question to say. But here
No, he's not charged. One who abandons his child, and I guess there's an intent element in the abandonment offense itself, may not thereafter leave the state of Georgia.
Okay, I'll back up. No, Georgia couldn't.
Georgia couldn't do that.
Georgia
that's not an equal protection problem. That's just a flat violation of the right to travel to impose that restriction on a person who's guilty of a misdemeanor. But you say he could do it if he escapes from prison. You'd say, well, you say he can't leave the state.
But there you've got one who escapes from prison knows he escapes from prison. I mean, he's talking about
here, one who abandons the child knows he's abandoned the child.
Not necessarily, Your Honor. There's a great difference there. But the other thing is that at least you've
got
to carefully.
Unless he willfully and voluntarily abandons his child.
In your hypothetical, you've got a carefully circumscribed group on which the statute impacts, and you don't
those
have that
who
here.
Who willfully abandon their children.
Well, here you've got
the same group in this case.
You've got parents. Any parent who's presumptively innocent, who hadn't been convicted, is subject to jeopardy under this particular statute.
But this is true of a person under indictment who flees the state. He carries the presumption of innocence right with him across the state border.
And the restrictions on him are reasonable. But what you've got
Why
is one who's at least charged
or
with a crime.
Less reasonable than with the misdemeanor that Justice Stevens postulated to him.
Well. Because that's a reasonable intrusion onto the right to travel vis-a-vis the state's interest in having him there and prosecuting him. I don't really see any analogy there. But this again is the same situation as if Georgia had isolated, say, the right to trial by jury and made that bear a special penalty of death, as in Jackson versus United States, or attaching a poll tax to voting in a federal election, as in Harmon versus Fresenius. This is what Georgia's done, and the reason that this case falls in the shadow of those authorities is, again, basically because of the wanton use Georgia makes of interstate travel as an element of this offense. Wanton because it has no nexus, it has no intent, not confined by any kind of purpose, need not have any relationship at all under that statute to the state's interest.
Well, do you question at all the authority of the state to criminalize the failure to support a child?
No, sir. None at all.
It's just a criminalizing not paying a debt in a sense.
Well, I have no qualms about that.
Yeah.
I'm here because my client's been branded a felon and not a misdemeanor.
Yeah, I know. But no part of your case questions at all the authority of the state to criminalize.
No, sir. I think there are a lot of policy reasons why not, and I think that's why you've got ERISA, because of the judgments that the state made that this kind of problem is better approached civilly.
You agree that the jury could have made it a misdemeanor?
Yes, but that's just entirely discretionary.
You agree to that? They could have done
it. Yes, sir. They could have done it. But it would be a judgment that would be made without any guidance, without any connection.
They could have done that in your case.
Yes, sir. Certainly could. Let me jump ahead to the strict scrutiny analysis, which I hope we reach somewhere. But if you figure that we've got a constitutionally protected right to travel here, then under the familiar formulas of this court, it would fall into strict scrutiny. And I don't mean to repeat it for your edification, but for mine, that would mean that the state would have to show that it's reasonably necessary to promote a compelling state interest. The state. Basically, their interest here comes down to extradition. When you look behind everything they can say about the welfare of the child and about the enforcement of the criminal law, on both avenues, it boils down to aiding extradition. But the thing is that's not necessarily compelling interest, because we've got the extradition clause of the Constitution, we've got the Federal Extradition Act, we've got ERISA, we've got the Uniform Criminal Extradition Act. All of these serve it. They completely serve that interest. And matter of fact, under the last two, Bobby Helms need not ever have even been in Georgia, much less have been a fugitive from Georgia. Under all of them, the caliber of the crime, the fact that it's a misdemeanor, not a felony, doesn't prevent extradition. He's extraditable under all of them. Elevating it to a felony doesn't apparently aid the state's interest one bit, except for the argument they make that governors will treat this offense more seriously and everything if it's a felony, which is a pretty good argument if you want to make the whole crime a felony, but it's not a pretty good argument for the distinction. The state fails on the necessity aspect of that strict scrutiny test, because simply under ERISA and everything else is just not necessary, and it can't promote it. Even if it were a felony and the state proceeded under ERISA, they would still encounter those relief provisions that the state talked about. A judge in Alabama could still, or a judge in another state by entertaining an action brought by the father over there could completely bar extradition under ERISA, regardless of whether it's a felony or misdemeanor. But in any event, ERISA is designed to be a supplementary kind of extradition procedure, not one that necessarily preempts. I forget exactly what section of ERISA it is, but the state's perfectly free to proceed under all its other extradition powers. And again, under all of those extradition powers, whether the thing is a felony or a misdemeanor, they still run into the governor's discretion. And making it a capital felony is not necessarily going to move that governor's discretion.
Well, what about the initial interest of the state in keeping the fellow within reach so that they can collect child support? Why isn't that a compelling interest in itself?
Well, because in effect it attaches a special penalty to any parent's right to travel.
Well, the right to
travel.
Well,
I know, but
I mean, whether he's going to come back,
accepting for the moment the fact that it burdens the right to travel, then there must be a compelling interest to justify it. And what's wrong with keeping him around so that support may be collected?
Maybe I should back up. Nothing would be wrong with that.
Why isn't that a compelling interest?
Well, that might be how the Chief Justice. The question a minute ago makes sense about one under indictment can't leave the state. I'm sorry. I'm sure if anyone's not making sense that it's it comes from here and not from there. No, I mean that's how his example is explicable, because that kind of restriction would completely and carefully serve that particular interest. But again,
surely Georgia could not make it a criminal offense for any Georgia parent to leave the state.
No, it couldn't.
Could it?
And as a matter of fact, it couldn't. You can carry it somewhat further and say any parent who wants to leave the state's got to stop at the state border and post bond for the support of his children.
Then
you'll have Alabama on the other side saying if he brings his children in, he's got to post bond to make sure they don't become public charges.
Are you suggesting the state couldn't adopt a felony statute that they couldn't leave the state if they left dependent minor children behind them?
I don't think the state could.
Well, what's this statute except that? That's what this statute is.
That's exactly
it?
Why the statute
is
wrong.
You say
it's bad.
It can't. That's your reason for saying it's bad.
Yes, sir. Yeah. That Georgia couldn't do that. This is a different degree of intrusion, but it's exactly the same kind of pattern of intrusion. Here, essentially, Georgia has taken a constitutionally secured right, the right to travel, and they've made the degree of an offense turn upon it. They've made the difference between a felony and a misdemeanor turn upon it, and they made it turn upon it. Bobby Helms couldn't come into court and say, my sick grandmother was over there and I had to visit her.
I understand your argument really doesn't rest on the fact that it's an abandonment case. Say it was a case involving it's a misdemeanor to shoot wildlife, shoot a bird or a deer or something like that. But if one does that and thereafter leaves the state, it's a felony. You'd make the same argument with that kind of statute.
Yes, sir.
Same thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think while it's silent, I'll sit down.
Do you have anything further? Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next.